A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 1980s in Sydney, which has been widely regarded as one of the most dangerous times to be a police officer in Australia. It was basically the Wild West. So I wrote a book about it. It was called Loose Units. And then we did a podcast about it. Loose Units Season 1 was an incredible experience, and we loved every minute of it. But it turns out that Dad did more than just patrol the streets. He plunged headfirst into the terrifying world of forensics. So on this season of Loose Units, that's what we're doing. We're going deep into the world of forensics and fingerprints and all of that good stuff. Well, I say good stuff. Actually, things got worse than ever. So strap in for Loose Units Season 2, Electric Blue. Hello everyone, and welcome to another piping hot episode of Loose Units 2, Electric Blue. I'm Paul Verhoeven, your host, and I'm sitting across from my dad, ex-cop John Verhoeven. How you doing, Dad?
I'm really good, Paul. How are you?
I'm okay.
Excellent.
Last week's episode was an absolute ball terror. It sounds very, very
ball
painful.
Terror. I wonder what that actually is. I think that means actually having your testicles torn off.
I would say it would be more like the sack would be torn, and the balls would just
drop out.
Probably going to bleep all of that, and if I haven't bleeped all of it, I'm so sorry. Every week we talk true crime from the 80s. In season one of Loose Units, Dad talked about his time in general duties, and in the book Loose Units, he talked about his journey throughout the police. But this season is forensics, and obviously this season has gone to some pretty damn dark places. But this week the prompt you've scribbled down doesn't seem that gritty and sensational. I'm sure you're going to prove me wrong, but you've just written Man in the White Overalls.
This is a great story.
Yeah.
In fact, all my stories are pretty good.
Well,
I think.
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Humble as ever. Yep.
Well, they are. They're actually, I think they're bloody fantastic. No, seriously. They're Sioux. They're even, not Sioux, as in the Sioux Indians, but they're so bizarre. Oh, God. All right. So, I was at the morgue, which I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, I used to spend probably half a day a week.
Can you just talk? Okay, a lot of people, obviously, in the Loose Units book, we talk about your first time visiting a morgue.
Mm.
But most people, I would say mercifully, haven't actually had to go to a morgue.
No.
And now, you spent most of your time, I'm assuming, still at the big one, Glebe?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay. So...
So it was opposite Sydney University. It was like, the coroner's court were there, and then out the back. So you drive into a side street out the back.
Yeah.
And you had what was called the police room, where all the police would be, funnily enough. And you'd go to a deceased and you'd follow the body and you'd get involved. This is when you were in general duties, and it was all just, you know, fairly basic. You'd have a viewing. You might have family come and identify the deceased.
Mm.
But that was that side of it. But then the forensic side of things was very, very different. So in my first foray into the morgue, as you know, when I was at the academy, they took us there and we got to see, you know, multiple bodies on these slabs, I guess you'd call them, undergoing postmortems, which is a fascinating process that we did discuss at length. But when I got involved in the identification of people, because there are lots of people that pass away through various... you know, circumstances, and a lot of them don't have ID on them. Now, this was a really interesting case where there was this guy I was confronted, and he was actually wearing all his clothes, that was really weird, at the morgue. So it was pre him being stripped down.
Mm.
But the story behind how he ended up at the morgue was interesting, to say the least. Mm. And my job that day was to fingerprint him. So I was confronted with a man, deceased. He looked about 40. He was super fit. You could tell, even in death, that he really looked after himself.
Don't the muscles slacken or something?
No, this is only like hours after he'd passed away.
Oh, okay, okay.
And so I'll now fill you and the listeners in with the backstory.
Great.
Which is fairly bizarre. There was a block of apartments in Manly, which is a coincidence, really. I mean, I lived on the Northern Beaches, but this particular guy, he was a professional cat burglar, the old school. He was fit. He was a career criminal. And his MO was to scale the outside of apartment blocks. And in this particular case, this particular apartment block in Manly was about 20 stories high.
Do you remember the specific building?
Yeah, it was called the Carillion.
And whereabouts is that in Manly?
It's on the Eastern Hill in Manly. And it's a magnificent eastern hill up near the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
With commanding views over Sydney Harbour.
Yeah.
And it's a triangular building.
Oh, I know the one.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful building.
Stunning. Now, the weird thing is, when you look at the building, it's at least 20 floors with perhaps three or four apartments on every floor. But at the bottom, so not on the ground level, but on the first level all around has extended balconies. Now, they're the only people in the entire building that have, they can actually walk out. Like everyone above, they open a sliding door and they walk onto a tiny balcony. But these particular apartments, they walk out onto a magnificent garden.
And you would actually, you would look up and see all the other balconies.
Correct.
Like push back a little bit.
Exactly.
Okay, great.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, this particular cat burglar, okay, look, I'm just going to move away a little bit from that and just put you in the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Around about 4 o'clock in the morning, a resident on the first floor, so this is a resident with the extended balcony, they heard a thud. So they're lying in bed and they hear this thump. And they woke up and then they went back to sleep.
Right.
And then an hour or two later, the person goes out into the kitchen and they're having or getting ready for a morning cup of tea.
Mm.
They look out onto their private courtyard, which is made up of, they've got lots of cactus plants, and they have got hundreds of thousands of beautiful, polished, tiny little pebbles, probably millions of them, to create this amazing sort of desert dry garden. It's very decorative, and the person is looking into their garden and they see lying down in their garden what appears to be a man, but they could only, it looked as though one arm, they couldn't quite see one arm, so he's lying there, one arm to the left, but his right arm, they just couldn't see it. And that particular person looked at this person and thought that it was a plumber. And he had his hand, they thought, down a drain.
Okay.
And he's clearing a blocked drain. This story gets really weird.
Great.
And the person then goes and has breakfast. And they come back and they look out the window. The
plumber's still there.
Not only is the plumber still there, but the plumber is in exactly the same spot. So this person opens the sliding door and goes out and does what most people would do. He says to the person, "Oh, you're right there, mate." And there's no response. Then the occupant of this particular apartment reaches down and shakes the person and realizes that they're not moving. And then, and here's a pretty depressing part of the story. He then rolls the person back. Now, what he saw was a very large, basically, homage to the rockery. In other words, this guy had fallen from probably, let's estimate, because I got to see the guy's face later on. He had fallen, I'd say, from between 10 and 15 floors and landed on his face in the garden. So his face had actually, it looked like a part of the garden. It had hundreds and hundreds of little stones embedded in his face, and the face was flat. You had to see it to believe it. You recall a few episodes ago, I made reference to a pizza.
Yeah, everyone really enjoyed that one, actually.
Well, the thing is, this guy, and can you imagine the poor occupant?
Was the occupant, for some reason, I'm picturing an older lady.
No, it was a guy.
Young guy? Old guy?
No, elderly guy. Poor guy.
Ah, damn it.
And he just rolled him over and saw this pizza face man
right.
lying there in these white overalls, pristine overalls, might I add. Really white.
Where'd the blood go?
There was no blood. Nothing.
The case of the bloodless man. Yeah. Where did the blood go?
Oh, it's all internal.
But I'm saying when a face gets smushed that much.
No, it was amazing.
But when you've talked about the way, when for every reaction, there is an equal and opposite reaction. You know,
there's not always blood. Look, in this particular case, he broke some bones.
Mm.
He broke his femur that actually punched through. But the guy wouldn't have seen that until he'd rolled him over completely. But the femur, which is the big bone between the hip and the knee, it had punched through the material, which is amazing.
Gross.
Anyway, so I get to the morgue, and my job is to identify this guy.
Mm.
Now, there was a female police constable, and her offsider had said to her, "Now, I want you to search this guy." And I was standing in the room watching her, and she searched the guy, but I was very aware that she didn't go near his groin, which you might think, well, but her job is to search this guy thoroughly, but she completely avoided his groin. Now, at this point in the story, you're thinking, well, yeah, so what? Well, what happened next was that one of the morgue attendants came in, and in front of us all, used these special scissors, and they cut all his clothing off to expose this guy, super fit, in his underwear. And then I looked down into the sort of the groinal area. Mm. Is there such a word as groinal?
There is anyway, now. Yeah.
Cool. And I saw what appeared to be a box. And furtively, someone managed to pull his underpants down and remove this small can of Strepsils. You know, Strepsils used to come in cans. I don't know whether they still do.
Mm.
And inside, and we all sort of looked around, and then they opened up the can of Strepsils, and it was full of the most incredible jewels. Not the crown jewels that had been... Sorry, but you're with me. Stay with me. So the thing is that it was embarrassing for the female police officer. She hadn't done the search properly.
Yeah.
These jewels, can you imagine if they had have been kept with the body? Which I guess they wouldn't, because they completely strip them down and do the post-mortem. But it's a classic case, and these were the spoils of his night's work. And he'd been in, what he used to do, he used to target high rise and scale the buildings, go in, because people leave their sliding glass doors open because they're living up high.
They don't assume anyone's going
to
come in the
way. No, and this guy, he'd go in, he'd generally go straight to the front door to see if the deadlock had been activated, which no one activates, because effectively you'd be locked in. And anyway, on this particular occasion, they may have had the deadlock activated, and he was leaving. He'd stolen, you know, some really nice stuff. He had an impeccable taste. He was really, really knowledgeable when it came to jewellery.
Mm.
Very discerning. And he slipped, and he fell. And
he died.
And he died.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at UH1.com.
If he fell... I'm just confused as to how he fell face first if he was presumably climbing backwards, like...
Paul,
what?
Have you ever seen people fall?
Thankfully, no.
Well,
I'm guessing they tumble a bit.
Yeah, look, that's why I'm thinking it would have been pretty high. So yeah. Imagine if he fell and then he would have perhaps turned himself around.
And that takes a few floors.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it takes around about 10 seconds to reach terminal velocity, which is 9.8 meters per second.
Okay, that's very specific. Let's do a quick sidebar.
Hmm.
You've mentioned this in passing, but I think it's worth noting, and this is a decent segue because you're talking about falling speeds.
Mm.
You were a skydiving instructor.
Not an instructor.
What level did you get to?
I did 1,100 jumps. Right. I was in a four-man team.
Okay. So you were like semi-professional? You were like
I was into it big time. It was my life for quite a few years.
So one time, I think I'd had a drink or two, and I came back home, and someone had been talking to me about, there's the start of a Bond film, I think it's maybe Moonraker, where... he jumps out of a plane without a parachute and tries to kind of like form a slipstream and go after a guy, grab his chute.
Yep.
And I said to you, hey, Dad, if I ever fell out of a plane or was thrown out of a plane and you just said, you'd die. And I said, yeah, but let's say I didn't die. And you said, well, no, you would die. And I said, let's just pretend in a magical world I don't die. And he goes, whatever. All right. And then I said, so what can I do midair to increase my chances of surviving?
Mm.
And you said, first step, aim for a freshly plowed field.
Correct.
Now, I don't know what they look like.
Hmm.
I can't discern the freshness of the plow from
that. Paul, the reason I say that is that I was in the Nationals at Corowa many years ago, and a guy actually had a major malfunction, and he actually survived by aiming for a freshly ploughed field. I mean, that sounds weird.
It was freshly ploughed by his body as ploughed into the ground.
You know what a ploughed field? It's got these sort of ridges, peaks and troughs.
Right, okay.
And it's ploughed, and he only broke his hip.
Huh.
And there is a certain shape you can, where you pretend you're sort of lying on top of a big beach ball, and that slows you down. So you've got sort of the maximum speed in skydiving if you're in a sheer dive is about 200 miles an hour, and the slowest you can slow yourself down is about 75, 80 miles an hour. So there's a fair, you know, and people have survived, and there are people that do jump out of planes with no parachute, and then they've got a friend that'll meet them down, you know, I mean, oh, shit. You know, like someone will pass a parachute. And I mean, that's stressful. But just a few months ago, and people can Google this because it sounds unreal, is that a guy in America jumped out of a plane with no parachute and landed on a trampoline. And that's a fact.
Are you serious?
100%.
Really?
And it's amazing.
Or was it just like some person's backyard trampoline?
No, it was a big trampoline.
Like a big one?
Huge.
Presumably.
Out in the desert. And his poor mum was watching. That would have been traumatic for her.
I mean, like when your kid's messing around on a trampoline, the stakes are rarely that high.
Mm.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, was this trampoline built specifically?
Specifically.
Right.
It's incredible,
so
isn't it?
So it wasn't like a run-of-the-mill trampoline.
True. Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Point taken. It was very large.
It's not
but
real.
Anyway, it worked.
Yeah.
Because that's a big thing to jump out of a plane with no parachute.
Did you ever have any major mishaps?
I had three malfunctions.
You want to talk us through some?
The first one, I was skydiving with a guy, an SAS commando. It was a Friday afternoon. There was no one there to see it. It was my first malfunction. One of the lines wrapped around caused what's called a May West, which looks like a bra, started to spin me around uncontrollably. I would have come in and been killed, but I cut away from the main. Went back into free fall, then deployed my reserve. That's the first one. Second one, I was testing out I was going to buy an altimeter, and I wanted to test it.
Is that to gauge how high up you are?
Yeah. It tells you what time to sort of break away. If you're in a formation at 3,500 feet, you break away. You max track out at 45 degrees to get away from everyone in your group. Then you
just for some alone time?
Yeah, well, it's safety to be away from everyone else because you don't want to pop your canopy when you're around other people.
Right.
And then at 2.5, you deploy your main, which still gives you time if you've got a problem. So I was trying out this guy's altimeter. I was going to buy it if it was good, and it failed. And I was the last person out of a DC3. There were about 60 of us at the Nationals. And I went sailing past, flying past everyone who'd already gone out and were under canopy. And I flew past them and I opened up my main at about 500 feet because the altimeter got stuck on about 3,000 feet. And if I had have had a malfunction at 500 feet,
yeah,
cut away, I would have died. And then the third time, seeing you've asked this,
yes,
is that I was skydiving at Wilton and I had what was called hesitation, which means your main canopy, there's an area of low resistance behind your back. Like it's an area where there's the air's flying either side. And what happens with this in skydiving, you pull out a tiny little parachute. It's called a drogue chute. And then it catches the air. Then it drags the main canopy out.
That's cute.
And I dragged out the little one, the drogue, and it was hesitating and it sort of was caught on my back in this area where there's no wind. So it's not going to, it needs wind to pull it out to then pull the main out.
Well, but typically anywhere behind you has got a lot of wind.
Yep. And so what happens in that situation, you turn around.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You turn around to look behind you. And then when you turn, that enables the air to pick up the, the drogue. And then so I'd had three malfunctions and that was the day that I decided that I was never going to jump out of a plane again.
I went to Vegas for a press trip about 5 years ago and there's a hotel in Vegas called the Stratosphere, which is just outside of the Vegas city limits because you've got New Vegas with all the new casinos and the older casinos and then there's a long, long, long road and then there's this thing called the Stratosphere and it's basically a 900-foot high sky needle. Right? The casino is at the base of it. There's a restaurant at the top, like on a disc, but they've got a little, like a gangplank on the top, and you can jump free fall. So they attach two cables to your back, you walk out onto the plank, and the cables are like hundreds of feet in either direction fastened to this thing. And then they let you fall, free fall, and then very close to the ground, they turn the brakes on the two cables, and that kind of tightens up and lowers you to the ground.
Amazing.
And that was 900 feet.
Yep.
Halfway down, I felt like I was about to hit the ground. Mm. I cannot imagine what it would have been like to have to deploy a chute that high.
Well, look, I've jumped out of a DC-3 from 18,000 feet.
What's a DC-3?
Like an old sort of, like a war plane. But, okay. You know, held about 60 people. And they take all the seats out, up you go, and then everyone just sort of runs out and screams Geronimo as you go out the back door. And it's exciting.
Yeah.
But that gave me around about 80 seconds free fall. That's over a minute, and that's a long, long time. And when you're coming towards clouds, really, really, it's all relative. If you look at skydivers just falling, they're just falling like stones in the air. But if you're up there, it's different, and it's amazing, and it's a really high adrenaline, exciting sport. But those days are gone for me.
Do you find what's it like for you? What is the can you describe the sensation of falling?
There is no sensation of falling.
What do you mean?
Well, when you jump out of a plane, you're jumping out of a moving object. So you're actually, if you can imagine, you're jumping out of something that's already got forward momentum.
Yeah.
So when you leave the aircraft, you're actually traveling at the speed of the aircraft. So you're not, if you jump out of a balloon, like you step off or you jump out of a helicopter, you experience that horrendous sensation of shit.
Yeah.
Like a roller coaster on speed.
That's what I felt, yeah.
Yeah, but you don't in skydiving unless, as I said, because, it's logical when you think about it.
Yeah,
actually leaving a moving object.
I always got confused when we were watching like a fight scene in a movie and people are on the top of a train. I always thought that if you jumped in the air,
you would
stay still, but you're traveling at the same speed.
Correct. It's weird, isn't it?
It's weird. But what I'm trying to approximate is, and I know this might sound grisly, but I think it's useful to try and figure out how it would have felt for the cat burglar as he fell 20-odd stories.
It would have felt completely, in that moment, he would have been totally aware of what was happening, and there are only two things you can do. You can either bad.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be in that moment, you'd feel pretty bad. Look, who knows? But it's just shit. And then you land, and thank God, you hope that he died. You know, I'd hate to think that he lay there for. It's possible he could have been there for an hour or two in incredible agony, but they don't know.
They couldn't have helped him. It sounds like You know,
but as I said, people in the Second World War, they jumped out of you know, Lancaster bombers on fire with no parachutes and survived.
It's pretty mental. I think a lot of people have recreationally jumped or fallen out of things or fallen off things and had accidents. Hearing that story, it's actually one of the lighter stories from this season, but it really did fill me with this kind of dread of like, yeah, but what would it have been like to, I think maybe if it was dark, it would have helped a little bit. You wouldn't.
Yeah, maybe. Look, who knows? It's just.
It's terrifying.
You don't want to dwell on these things.
No, it's terrifying. Well, look, I would love to have you answer some questions from listeners if you're up for it.
Yeah, go for it.
This one's a bit of... this one's a bit intense. Sam McCann asks, what's something that's unresolved that you still think about?
Well, Sam, that's a really good question. I'll answer it really, really briefly, but then you'll get to hear a story in another episode, Sam. Yeah. Because it's a particular murder that I went to of a prostitute. So that's pretty well unresolved. So you'll get to hear about the story of the prostitute found in the bushes. And Sam, you'll know that that's the story.
So you're saying, Sam, I can't tell you that
right
now?
Not at this stage, because there's a whole episode based on that particular case.
Okay. So we'll deal with that one in a coming episode.
Yep.
Well, let's find another question then. Okay, another question. Adam Swanick has asked, how did you make the switch from general duties policing to working in forensics? Specifically, were there any hazing-type rituals that newbies were subjected to?
Really, really good question. The ritual was simply to go there and go to all those horrendous crimes that you really hadn't seen in their entirety in general duties. So GDs, you get to go in and you see something and then you leave and
right.
You call in the experts. All of a sudden you're on the other end where you're the guy that's being called in to actually go in and sit there in situ with perhaps three or four bodies and you're sitting there on a chair and they're at your feet, you and your mate, trying to get into the whole vibe of and it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Because you can't just look. You've got to, you know, if you could walk into a room, like, you know, we're in the studio, and I'm fascinated by all the gadgets, the gizmos, you know, the way it's set up, and I'm a very visual person, so I can walk into a room, pretty well any room, and I can spend maybe 20 seconds in a room,
yeah,
and then I can go out, and then I could sit down and pretty well describe to you in some detail every single item in that room. Now that's training. So I'm a very visual person. You know, I can do that really, really, really easily, but I cannot remember people's names. No, it's a fact.
I know.
I can't remember people's names. It's embarrassing.
I've seen it happen.
Yeah.
You know.
So, you know, it's a matter of what type of brain you've got, how you choose. And I think if you're talking about, you know, files inside your brain, you know, names don't take up a lot of space. But my sort of hard drive is very visual, so it's got so much information in there, but it's a visual, which takes up a lot of memory.
Okay.
That's my analogy.
So I guess, right, so you're saying that the job was punishment enough?
Very much so. But okay. They didn't have any. Look, I know that in the tactical response group and certain other squads, they had certain, you know, what would you call it, initiation?
Did they?
Oh, God, yeah, but that's, you know.
Did they?
Yep. Well, TRG did.
You ever hear anything about anything?
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about that.
Why not?
Because it's not my business to talk about that.
You've talked about worse than that.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I wasn't there. It's hearsay.
Sure. I guess I'm trying to figure out whether hazing was a frequent thing in the police force, you know.
Yeah, we discussed that in general duties. I discussed, remember that time when the young policeman was thrown up against the drinks machine at North Sydney?
Nope, never told that story.
Haven't I?
Nope. You want to tell it now? It's a flashback to the.
It's a flashback,
but that's fine. We'll flashback to general duties. I think it's
also
worth it.
This young constable. Who was a lovely guy, and he was sweet and kind of looked. You know, he looked well. It's hard to sort of describe, but he looked sort of. Oh God, dare I say it? Innocent, if there's such a thing. And he was about 20.
Mm.
And he had blonde hair. He sort of looked sort of Nordic and sweet, and you know, very kind of inoffensive, I suppose you could say. And a senior police officer, we had to parade. At the back of the station in North Sydney. This is like weird going way, way back to GDs in the first days. I mean, you talk about, you know, bullying and stuff like that, but I remember that we were all lined up and this was this young guy's first shift. from the academy, and a senior police officer came up and turned him around and spun him around 180 degrees in front of us all, and threw him up against a drinks machine and sort of simulated sort of sodomy with this guy.
on his first day.
Yeah. So that's pretty, you know.
I have a real... My first day at high school at St. Paul's Manly, my first day, the year 12s maybe stand at the back of the buses that kind of wound down these insane hills. And anytime I touched anyone or anything for support, they would punch me in the chest or the kidneys.
Disgusting. That school was pretty...
bad place.
Yeah.
Bad people.
Bad place. You know, that was very, very bad.
I think we've talked on this show before about what it was like being a parent and having a kid who was bullied, but knowing that you were a cop and having a like an innate drive to pursue justice. But I'm pretty sure we've already dealt with that topic. So, I mean, if you go back and listen to season one, you'll hear all about that stuff.
Yeah.
It must be weird though, flashing back to general duties after, because right now you're kind of situated psychologically right in the middle of forensics, right? Well, look, we've got some amazing, amazing stuff coming up later this season, and we're going to keep answering your questions. But in the meantime, I think that's all the time we have for this episode. So thank you so much for listening to another episode of Loose Units, proudly brought to you by Pillow Talk Productions. It's not long now until our live show, and we've only got a few tickets left, seriously. So head online and grab your ticket to Loose Units Live right now. Like, pause the podcast. You're back? Great, I assume you bought the tickets. We'll be signing copies of Loose Units, the book. So if you haven't already got your copy, you can go and order one via Big W or at penguin.com.au, or you can grab one off us on the night. And we will sign it for you. We'll actually dedicate the book to you. Thanks for everyone who's been getting in touch, and we'll see you next week for more Loose Units.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.